John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, October 26, 2010. Local sources in Jerusalem reported that on Monday, Israeli authorities handed 231 demolition orders targeting Arab and Palestinian homes in several neighborhoods in occupied East Jerusalem. Clashes between Palestinian residents and Israeli police occurred as orders were handed out. Injuries were reported. Hundreds of residents also protested near Bab al-Amud in East Jerusalem. They held pictures of elected Hamas legislators who had protested at the Red Cross in Jerusalem after an Israeli court order that revoked identity cards and ordered their expulsion from the city. The Hamas interior minister of the dissolved government in Gaza spoke at a university in Khan Yunis in Gaza. He stated that Hamas will liberate Acre and Haifa, and armies from different parts of the world will join in the effort. In addition, he told Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that Hamas will remain steadfast on the path of resistance. He said Israeli leaders are worried about traveling abroad because they fear prosecution by international criminal courts. He accused President Mahmoud Abbas of providing endless concessions to Israel. On Tuesday morning, the slogan Kahana Tasdak, which means Kahan was right, was found written on the walls of restaurants, stores, and in a Latin church in the Israeli city of Jaffa. An eyewitness saw the settlers arriving in a car, then spraying the slogan on the door of a school. Later, graffiti was found sprayed on other walls. Informed, police did not respond in a direct manner. These acts of spraying Kahan was right have been ongoing and appear in several villages. Hani was a radical Israeli rabbi and leader of the Jewish Jewish terrorist organization, Kach, which advocated immigration to Israel, warning of another Holocaust. He was shot in Manhattan in 1990 following a speech he had given. Medical sources reported on Tuesday morning that a retarded Palestinian was shot by Israeli soldiers stationed in the towers surrounding the military terminal near Beit Hanan in the northern Gaza Strip. He was transferred to a hospital for treatment of a mild wound. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu intends to offer a 3-month freeze on settlement activities and is said to be preparing a plan to submit to the American president next month. He plans to say that Israel will not construct in West Bank settlements for 3 months, after which limited construction for natural growth will resume for 9 months. Netanyahu's office denied decisions regarding a new settlement freeze. Although peace talks are ongoing with the Obama administration, the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank is demanding that Israel halt all settlement activities and stop its invasions and arrest campaigns in the occupied territories before peace talks are resumed with Palestinians. On Tuesday morning, Israeli soldiers invaded and kidnapped 5 Palestinians in Beit Umar, north of Hebron, after invading and searching several homes. Also on Tuesday, the Israeli army continues arrests in Jerusalem and in other Palestinian cities. 6 Palestinians were abducted in occupied Jerusalem, and 6 in the Ras al-Ma'mur neighborhood. Israeli police claimed they hurled stones at police vehicles and border guards. The Israeli Offer Military Court sentenced Palestinian legislator Hatem Kefeja of the Hamas Change and Reform Bloc to 6 months in administration detention without presenting any charges against him. Islamic legislators demanded that the international community intervene to stop Israeli detentions without being given the reason for arrest, saying Israeli military courts are committing crimes against humanity and violating international law. Kefeja has been subjected to numerous arrests in the past. Several other members of his family have also been subjected to repeated arrests. Currently, 12 elected legislators are being held captive. 2 Palestinians were killed on Monday evening due to a power surge at a siege-busting tunnel in Rafah, in the southern part of Gaza. One of many, the tunnel was used for smuggling food supplies and basic materials into Gaza. Approximately 150 Palestinians have died and dozens were wounded in similar accidents in tunnels bordering Egypt. A study released by the International Transparency Organization on Tuesday found Israel to be among the most corrupt countries in the Western world. The 2010 study ranked 178 countries. A score of 1 was given for the least corrupt. Israel was listed as number 30. The research shows that Israel received a score of 6.1 out of 10 in the Corruption Perceptions Index, or CPI, which ranks countries according to the perception of corruption as judged by the public sector. Of the 33 Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development members, Israel is in the 22nd place and has the widest social gaps. Denmark, New Zealand, and Singapore are the least corruptive countries, according to the International Transparency Organization. That's some of our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. You've been listening to Palestine Today, a program of the International Middle East Media Center. For more updates and for details of these stories, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report was brought to you by Hussam Cassis and Doris Norito.
Afghanistan. Yesterday, NATO warplanes bombed the mosque, killing 25 people they claim were insurgents. The locals on the ground report at least some were innocent civilians. NATO claims 15 insurgents were killed, but locals say the airstrike destroyed a mosque and killed civilians. NATO denies attacking a mosque. People are very angry, said eyewitness Selah Ayyub, 26-year-old driver in Megan Village where the incident took place. He said foreign troops arrived in the village around 2 a.m. and there was a fierce gunfight before the airstrike. Only two walls and one small room of a building he described as a mosque were now standing, said Ayyub, and villagers were digging the dead out from under the rubble with farming tools and washing them for burial. Afghanistan, yesterday, a Dutch aid worker was captured by four unknown armed fighters. Afghanistan today. Afghanistan has finished second behind only Somalia in a global index of government corruption published by Berlin-based Transparency International. Afghanistan Saturday. A suicide car bomber blew up the entrance to a United Nations office Saturday in western Afghanistan, allowing at least three other fighters wearing bomb vests to charge into the building, officials reported. The car bomb destroyed the gate and at least three other militants, all wearing explosive vests, went inside, said Nabik Arlene, a spokesman for the provincial governor of Herat province. Afghan security forces exchanged gunfire with the attackers, killing at least one of them, said Ministry of the Interior spokesman Zamiri Bashari. United States, Monday. Omar Conner has been held in Guantanamo Bay prison since he was 15, for allegedly killing U.S. troops in battle in 2001 in Afghanistan. On the 25th of October, he pled guilty to killing U.S. troops in war. Since when do prisoners of war have to face trial and prison sentences for combat on a battlefield? This is a gross violation of the Geneva Conventions. Australia. Former Australian Prime Minister John Howard got shoes thrown at him on live TV protesting the war in occupied Iraq. Iraq today. Tariq Aziz, Iraq's foreign minister and deputy prime minister during the Saddam era, has been sentenced to death for his role in persecuting Shiite dissidents during that era. Like the execution of Saddam by a puppet of his conquerors, this is sure to be seen by Sunni insurgents as an act of sectarian revenge. Iraq, according to WikiLeaks. Evidence that U.S. soldiers handed over detainees to a notorious Iraqi torture squad has emerged in army logs published by WikiLeaks. Tortures used by pro-U.S. Iraqi forces have included cutting off fingers and burning hands with acid. Iraq, ongoing. New York Times reporters Timothy Williams and Omar al-Jalashi report that Iraqi soldiers are heavily into drugs. Quote, pills are cheaper than cigarettes and they make you more comfortable and relaxed, said Nazan al-Jabouri, a police officer in Nevada province in northern Iraq. They help us forget that we are hungry, and they make it easier to deal with people. They encourage us during moments when we are facing death. Some senior police and army officers said that because drug abusers were typically among the most fearless fighters, they were loath to take disciplinary action against them. Mr. Barack Obama, this shit is starting to sound like something out of Apocalypse Now. Don't you think one Vietnam was enough? Now's the time to throw in the towel and cut your losses. Bring all the troops home today. Late night on the 25th of October or early morning on the 26th, somebody shot up the Marine Corps Recruiting Center in Chantilly, Virginia with a high-powered rifle. In earlier news, the FBI has confirmed that the same rifle was used to shoot up the Pentagon and the Marine Corps Museum. Once again, as in the other two incidents, this was property damage only with no human injuries.
No more lies.
as U.S. and NATO troops fighting in Afghanistan see a record number of military and civilian casualties in the nine-year-old war. News reports indicate that the Afghan government and the Taliban may be taking the first tentative steps toward negotiations. U.S. officials have confirmed that they are providing safe passage to Taliban leaders traveling to the capital city of Kabul to initiate peace talks with representatives of Afghan President Hamid Karzai. But there is skepticism that these talks will lead to any quick peace deal as violence escalates across Afghanistan between Taliban insurgents and American and NATO forces now numbering 150,000. According to U.S. military officials, the number of airstrikes and unmanned drone attacks targeting the Taliban have increased exponentially over the past 4 months. Observers believe that the escalation of the air campaign is part of a two-track strategy designed to bring more pressure on Taliban commanders in order to drive them toward a diplomatic solution. Any future negotiations between the Taliban and Afghan government will be made more difficult by the widespread perception that President Karzai's government is thoroughly corrupt. The latest indication being a decision by Afghanistan's Election Commission to throw out about 1 million ballots cast in the September 18th parliamentary election, eliminating about 23% of the votes due to fraud. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with former CIA analyst Melvin Goodman, who now serves as a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He assesses the viability of talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban and hard decisions facing President Obama as he and his advisors conduct a review of their Afghan war strategy in December.
Well, I don't think the negotiations are serious at this point. And I don't even believe I would use the term negotiations. I think what we're seeing are unofficial personal contacts between the Afghan government, particularly the people closest to Karzai, and certain Taliban leaders. And it's true that the Taliban has been given safe conduct so they can travel to Kabul for these talks. But when you look at the demands that the two sides are making, I don't see room for compromise right now. The Taliban is demanding that all foreign troops withdraw before there are any negotiations. And the United States is demanding that not only must the Taliban reject al-Qaeda, which wouldn't be difficult, but that the Taliban must lay down their arms and declare allegiance to the Kabul government. And I don't see that happening. Right now, the Taliban are doing extremely well. They seem to have a certain amount of cohesion in the field. I think they're following a strategy. Their forces are spreading out into areas where they haven't been before, particularly the Tajik areas in the north. They're doing very well in the south and the east. Whereas you look at the United States counterinsurgency strategy, and I think it's adrift right now. If you look at what happened at Marja about 6 months ago, that was a major disappointment. The Kandahar offensive really wasn't a full-scale offensive. It had to be scaled down because the support we thought we would get from the Afghan military just was not forthcoming. So I think the only one really interested in some kind of compromise at this point is Karzai, because he doesn't know what the United States is going to do. He knows that President Obama is seriously conflicted over strategy. I mean, I'm sure he read the December 1st West Point speech just the way everyone else did. And here was a speech that talked about putting troops in, and the same speech he talked about taking them out. And then when you read Bob Woodward's Obama's Wars, which I think is a fascinating account of how that decision was made, it shows that his advisors were conflicted, including among the military, that just as many generals were pushing against introducing more troops as there were generals and admirals pushing for more troops. So it's not clear what's going to happen in December. When we have this review, I'm inclined to think right now it's not going to be a serious review. And I don't expect any serious withdrawal to take place in July 2011, which is what Obama has promised and what Vice President Biden has assured people will definitely happen. So what the New York Times did a few days ago to say that the end game has begun, I think that is really premature at this point.
The topic of Afghanistan is not really a primary issue being debated in this election campaign. But despite the fact that there is not a lot of focus on the Afghan war among the American people, if you were going to make the case to the president if you were to advise him on withdrawing troops from Afghanistan or when to do it? What case would you make in terms of national security issues and the concern among many people who've expressed this over the years, including Obama during the campaign, that we have to remain in Afghanistan in order to prevent al-Qaeda from getting a foothold there and allowing a safe haven to develop for future attacks on this country and other places around the world?
Well, I think I would talk on the basis of the mythology surrounding this decision in the first place. And I would start with al-Qaeda and the so-called safe haven in Afghanistan and the likelihood that a Taliban government would bring al-Qaeda back in. First of all, I don't think the Afghan safe haven that al-Qaeda had before 9/11 was as influential to the attack as people seem to believe. For one thing, the operational aspects of the 9/11 attacks did not take place in Afghanistan. The training took place in the United States at our own flight schools. The money for the operation was raised from sources that were based in Germany and distributed by al-Qaeda members who were in Hamburg, Germany, and a couple other German cities. And a lot of the recruiting took place in Northern Africa and Southern Europe. So Afghanistan itself was not that important as a safe haven. And right now, al-Qaeda has a safe haven in Pakistan. It's not necessary for them to come back into Afghanistan. There are very few al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan. The CIA director, Leon Panetta, in a briefing several months ago, put the number as 50 members of al-Qaeda, and that's probably an overstatement. And actually, right now, al-Qaeda is far more ensconced in Yemen. That seems to suggest they wouldn't need another safe haven in addition to Pakistan, given what they have in Yemen and the tribal areas of Pakistan. And then I would argue the point that this is not a war of necessity. What happens in Afghanistan is essentially limited to Afghanistan itself. The Taliban has no desire to extend its influence or power outside of Afghanistan. Omar, the Taliban leader, strictly has objectives and a mission that are defined by regaining the government in Kabul. And also, if you look at the neighbors of Afghanistan, this is a problem that the regional members should deal with. Iran certainly is opposed to the return of the Taliban. We have worked secretly with Iran before. I'm told we're still working secretly with them and bringing them into the talks that are going on now with the so-called Peace Council that it took Karzai a year to form. And the irony of this whole situation, and this would be my final point that I would make, the degree to which we are successful in Afghanistan with this counterinsurgency strategy means we would be driving the Afghan Taliban out of Afghanistan and into Pakistan, where they would ultimately join forces with the Pakistan Taliban and put more pressure on the very weak Pakistan government. So winning would be losing, as far as I'm concerned, because of the Pakistan problem that would be created.
That was former CIA analyst Mel Goodman, a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and adjunct professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. His latest book is titled Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. Read his articles online at CIPonline.org.
Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Well, DNA is natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
On the 21st of October, D.C. area animal rights activists deployed to a variety of Huntington Life Sciences targets, protesting the British government's sentencing of six fellow activists, possibly to long prison terms, for opposing Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing laboratory where 500 animals a day are tortured to death testing things like bleach and Splenda. Every corporation in the world knows if you do business with Huntington Life Sciences, like Bayer and Sanofi of Venice do, you have problems with protests like this one, where their lobbying headquarters in D.C. were stormed by protesters. Today, protesters showed up at Huntington Life Sciences funder Goldman Sachs, drawing Capitol Police, who arrived with machine guns and shotguns, but unlike the previous week, took no action.
You can send all the police you want, Goldman Sachs. You can take all the security and have all of them stand
up. Okay, you should have just dropped your shares. Would have been a whole heck of a lot easier.
This was followed by another protest at Nomura.
Because of your continued involvement in Fortress, you are the number one shareholder in Fortress Investment, which is a lifeline of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day of the week. We are here standing in solidarity with six animal rights campaigners that are currently on trial in England. These animal rights campaigners were arrested taking actions against Huntington Life Sciences, doing nothing more than we're doing today.
Protesters also stopped by Sanofi of Venice before moving on to the Embassy of Britain, the nation that is trying to send six people to jail for long periods for nothing more than these protesters were doing on the 21st of October in D.C.
The British Embassy! We are out here because today is the trial of six campaigners against Huntington Life Sciences. They are being sentenced today because they have done nothing more than engage in legal free speech activity to shut down Huntington Life Sciences. This is part of an ongoing series of activist repression the British government has been a part of. The British government has a history of protecting Huntington Life Sciences against the activities of campaigners in their country. Why does the British government continue to silence activists and prop up Huntington Life Sciences? It's because the British government is well aware that once Huntington Life Sciences closes down, this will be a monumental moment for activism across the world, as it will be the first time that a grassroots campaign has shut down a formerly multi-billion dollar industry. But the British government needs to stop. You can put our friends in jail.
We will drive the final nail.
On the 21st of October, sentencing began in Britain for six activists known as the Shack UK Six for organizing peaceful protests against puppy killing, beagle punching Huntington Life Sciences, a contract animal testing laboratory with facilities both in Britain and in New Jersey here in the United States. On the 23rd of October, protesters at a Shack UK solidarity protest at the Georgetown home of Abbott Fund Vice President John Richardson were threatened by police with arrest for tinted windows in a car, for incommoding, and for refusing to provide ID.
Gentlemen, I need your ID.
No, you don't.
No, I don't have free to go. At this point, you're being stopped for infraction.
For infraction?
Just standing in the three people.
Once again, the cops had to stuff their demand for identification where the sun doesn't shine, as animal rights activists never carry identification of protests in D.C., and no law requires carrying ID. And yet, these bluffing cops whose threats were lies couldn't arrest anybody and had to let everybody go in the end. And it was too late anyway. They closed the barn door after the horse was out. The protests had already taken place. Target Michael Pace of Goldman Sachs.
What a crowd gathering at the surface. Guy in a gray shirt and shooting video. The noise is still pretty substantial even out here.
At the home of Michael Pace, Director of Government Relations for Goldman Sachs, because Goldman Sachs investments fund the deaths of 500 animals each and every day of the week. Goldman Sachs continues to own 800,000 shares in Fortress Investments, the life support system of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility who kills 500 animals each and every day of the week, bringing us products that we don't need, like bleach, Splenda, and Viagra. Michael Pace is doing everything he can to get rid of us. His company has called 80 cops on us with AR-15 assault rifles. His company then brought back cops the next week with shotguns and assault rifles. But this has not driven us away, because the only thing that will drive us away, Michael Pace, is you ending your ties with Huntington Life Sciences.
Second target, John Richardson in Georgetown of Abbott Fund, owned by Abbott Labs, a Huntington Life Sciences customer.
In solidarity with the UK Shack 6. The UK Shack 6 have been arrested for nothing more than peaceful protest activity.
Like what we're doing today.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Additionally, this protest is in honor of Stephen Murphy, an innocent activist who was wrongly convicted for an environmental action. We will fight!
We know where you sleep that night!
We will fight the animals! We will fight!
We know where you sleep that night!
That's right, John Richardson. And that's right, Michael Pace. Michael Pace of Goldman Sachs, a company that sicked 75 cops with machine guns on animal rights protesters, shortly after the IMF and World Bank protests. We do know where you sleep at night. And Huntington Life Sciences protests are like search warrants. They can be served at any time of the day or night. Better dump Huntington Life Sciences now. Because in D.C. there's... no sleep for the wicked. The Sea Shepherd Conservation Society has unveiled a new super ship, the Ocean Adventurer, to replace the Adi Gil, the fast ship that was sunk last year by a Japanese whale poaching security ship, the Shonen Maru No. 2. The Ocean Adventurer will join other Sea Shepherd ships in Operation No Compromise, the upcoming campaign against illegal whale poaching by Japan. She will be used in the same role as the Adi Gil, as a tactical interceptor capable of blocking harpoon shots. Since it is known that the whalers try to ram smaller vessels like the Adi Gil, strategy this year will have to take this into account and keep a fighting reserve of fuel aboard at all times. The Ocean Adventurer looks from the air like a cross between a larger version of the Adi Gil and a destroyer. To the Japanese Embassy, all the nightmares poachers in your nation had about the Adi Gil are going to come true this year as the larger and plenty fast Ocean Adventurer takes her place blocking their shots. These criminals will be lucky to kill 250 to 300 whales this year, given that they strained to get half their self-imposed quota of 500 last year, even after sinking the Adi Gil.
In September, the Clean Air Task Force released a report titled The Toll from Coal, an updated assessment of death and disease from America's dirtiest energy source. The report noted that emissions from coal-fired power plants contribute to global warming, ozone smog, acid rain, regional haze, and, perhaps most consequential of all from a public health standpoint, fine particle pollution. One estimate cited in the study found that while 13,200 deaths in the U.S. were attributable to fine particle pollution in 2010, that figure was nearly double for deaths linked to coal-fired power plants in 2004. The health consequences were reduced, the report finds, due to cleanup efforts targeting coal-burning facilities at the state and federal levels, but much more still needs to be done. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhu spoke with Conrad Schneider, Advocacy Director of the Clean Air Task Force, about the latest developments and some of the contradictions inherent for those living near coal extraction sites when it is cleaned up for burning in plants often hundreds of miles away.
Since 2004, probably the biggest news is that the sulfur dioxide pollution and the nitrogen oxide pollution from power plants has been cut in half nationally. And the reason for that is the installation of about 130 new emission control devices. Typically, they're called scrubbers. And as a result of that reduction in pollution, the number of deaths, for example, that are due to coal-fired particulate pollution has dropped from the 2004 level, which is 24,000, down to a little over 13,000 in this year. So that's the good news. The bad news is that 13,000 people dying prematurely from coal plant pollution is still far too many, and it's unacceptably high. And what this report also basically points to is that we can finish this job. By installing over 100 scrubbers, we were able to cut pollution in half without noticing any increase in electricity prices, natural gas prices, without seeing any problems with reliability in the power system. That means we can go further, and if we are resolute about cleaning up the rest of the plants, you know, we can finish the job of reducing this toll from coal.
When I was in West Virginia last year, I met folks who said that as requirements for cleaner coal for power plants went into effect, the coal was cleaned near where it was mined, and the cleanup left their communities with even more toxic pollution. Does the Clean Air Task Force have a position on whether coal should be phased out as soon as possible, or do you just want to clean it up?
You know, I think the fact of the matter is whether from cradle to grave, coal is a pretty dirty fuel, a pretty damaging, the most environmentally damaging fuel that we have. we put out a report several years ago actually called Cradle to Grave, which documented all of the different ways in which coal is devastating to the environment. And when you allude to the notion that in West Virginia that the coal has to be cleaner when it's delivered to the power plants, that some of the residue is left behind, it's exactly right. And people call it spray and pray because they treat the coal and then they move it out. The problem is that nationally, half of our power comes from coal, and in West Virginia, almost 100% of it comes from coal. And wishing is not going to make that go away. I guess our position, as long as we're going to have coal, then there needs to be tightly regulated so that its emissions and its waste products and so forth do as little to foul the environment as possible as we're transitioning to a cleaner energy economy.
Conrad Schneider, what about the dangers of coal ash? Does your organization address that?
A little over 10 years ago, we brought a petition to have actually it was still in the Clinton administration, to deal with the problem of the disposal of coal ash. In this country, every year, the residue from burning of coal, the scrubbing of coal, all the different byproducts that come as a result of coal burning create enough ash, if you want to call it that, or waste, to fill the Grand Canyon every year. And the stuff is being put into slurry ponds, unlined landfills, backfilled into mines. Such a volume of it, they're putting it wherever they can potentially find to put it. It's coming out of our ears. And it is full of heavy metals and toxics. And we believe that it should be treated as it is, as a hazardous waste by the government. And so we petitioned EPA to do that. And finally, after years bouncing around in the courts and so forth, the Obama administration has proposed a coal ash rule, which is due to go final soon, which hopefully can finally make that declared a hazardous waste and require proper disposal.
Is this the regulation where the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has presented two different options?
That's exactly right. There's, to be a little technical about it, there are two options under RCRA, which is the Waste Disposal Statute. And one of them is a D, as in dog, waste, and one is a C, as in cat waste. And we're arguing, or have argued, that coal ash needs to be treated as a C waste, which would make it hazardous. There's some modifications to that, as I said, that would allow truly beneficial reuses of the waste, which would avoid the hazardous label. But the D classification would essentially just leave this, once again, up to the states. And so far, that has proven inadequate.
That was Conrad Schneider, Advocacy Director with the Clean Air Task Force. For more information, call the organization's office in Boston at area code 617-624-0234 or visit their website at catf.us.
Is your SUV running low on gas? Is your wallet been running on fumes lately? Well, this is Behind Pollution, offering blowout prices on regular, plus, and premium at every BP Behind Pollution gas station, where you can get a gusher of savings filling up that Ford Excursion or that Hummer. And never mind our blown-out oil well at Macondo in the Gulf of Mexico. Never mind all those oiled pelicans. And never mind this burning hot summer of global warming. Never mind the voices that tell you to boycott BP for the horrific things Behind Pollution has done in the Gulf of Mexico. Just keep filling up that SUV. Just keep enjoying that gusher of savings the blowout prices at BP gas stations are bringing you. After all, you never liked seafood much anyway.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. For From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit soaw.org or call 202-234-3440.